Mrs. Eddy by Hugh Studdard Kennedy. Chapter 33. The Journal. In many respects, the founding of the Christian Science Journal in 1883 was a master stroke of policy. The tendency of the movement, especially at first, was to spread sporadically. Word of a case of sickness healed in Salem, Massachusetts, would be sent by letter or carried by a friend to a sick person in Salem, Oregon, perhaps accompanied by a copy of Science and Health. And the sick person in Salem, Oregon, being restored to health, as many were while reading the book, would pass on the good news to others. And very soon, a little group, intensely eager to learn more of the new teaching, would be formed. Members of this group would gather in each other's houses for discussion and the exchange of views and experiences. And letters any one of them might receive from Boston from those who were devoting themselves to the study and practice of Christian Science were read and reread, and then sent on further afield. The one thing needed above all others was a connecting link, however slight, to bring these widely scattered groups together in some bond of fellowship. In those early days, there were few, as there were always to be few, who could have understood Mrs. Eddy's steadfastly maintained counsel of perfection, that the one true bond of perfectness was devotion to principle. They felt deeply the need of personal guidance. The path they had set out to traverse was unaccustomed, and any assurance that they were not traveling alone would be gladly welcomed. Such assurance was supplied by the journal, even when it was only a little 8-page paper, published every 2 months. It was infinitely better than nothing. But by 1885, it had become a sizable magazine. How clearly Mrs. Eddy realized the need is seen in her statement in the first issue. At this date, 1883, she writes, a newspaper edited and published by the Christian Scientists has become a necessity. Many questions important to be disposed of come to the college and to the practicing students. Yet, but little time has been devoted to their answer. Further enlightenment is necessary for the age, and a periodical devoted to this work seems alone adequate to meet the requirement. The history of the little magazine was checkered from the first, as it was to be for many years. One after another, its editors or associates would enter upon their work full of enthusiasm and devotion, only to drift away after a year or two and embark on some course of their own. Arthur True Buswell, its first business manager, whose aid to Mrs. Eddy and his care for her after the death of Gilbert Eddy had been so faithful and unselfish, found the going too rough and was soon counted among the opposition. For Richard Kennedy, Daniel Spofford, Edward Ahrens, and others who had become alienated from Mrs. Eddy were still active. Indeed, it quickly became clear that the more rapid the advance of the original movement, the more attractive to public interest would be any version of mental healing. This presented a constant invitation to those who were discontented. In some cases, of course, the age-old human failing embodied in the conviction that it is better to be first man in a village than second man at Rome was particularly in evidence. And in the early days of Christian Science, when the outside world had no sure way of distinguishing the original from the takeoff, it was easy for the dissident to go out and build a village, secure a following, and persuade many into the new fold. Arthur Buswell went out in January of 1884, and his place was taken by a Mrs. Emma Hopkins, wife of a professor of Andover. She was an able, well-educated woman, had been healed by Mrs. Eddy of a serious illness, had gone through one of her classes, and now embarked on her new work as associate editor of the journal with enthusiasm. Her position, bringing her, as it did, in constant association with Mrs. Eddy, gave her an outstanding place among her fellows, thus making her the target for both attack and temptation. The usual difficulties were not long in developing. In the summer of 1884, there came to the Metaphysical College to study a woman from Detroit named Mary H. Plunkett, who was so impressed with Mrs. Hopkins' possibilities that the journal editorship seemed to her of too limited a scope for such genius. Why not withdraw to freer expression and wider fields? Emma was not only a genius, so Mrs. Plunkett assured her, but a woman with a destiny. With her learning and her familiarity with the mysteries of mind, she might well be a 19th century Hypatia. And Mrs. Plunkett asked nothing better than to sit at her feet and forward her goings. She felt, too, that a way should be found to further her view that all marriages should be the result of selection by soul affinity. She does not seem to have featured this theory until later, but however this may be, she had, within a few months, completely won over Emma Hopkins to the view that her abilities were being wasted in her subordination to Mrs. Eddy, and that she had better join with her in founding a new school of metaphysics. And so they left Boston together, taught their own system for some time in Detroit and Chicago and other Midwestern cities, published a magazine entitled The International Magazine of Christian Science, but before long faded out as a serious threat to Mrs. Eddy's leadership. Mrs. Hopkins' history as associate editor of the journal was the history of no fewer than three of her immediate successors. It was not until 1890 that the journal was able to shake itself free, as far as Mrs. Eddy's partisans were concerned, from the taint of apostasy. All through this long period, however, Mrs. Eddy remained firmly at the helm, directed the policy of the magazine, and wrote much of its content. A copy of the journal in the summer of 1885, shortly after Mrs. Eddy made her appearance at Tremont Temple, affords an interesting cross-sectional view of the movement as a whole about this time, and of Mrs. Eddy's connection with it. Thus, the journal for August 1885, which is designated Number 5, Volume 3, is a magazine of some 15 pages. It is well printed on good paper and is varied in its content. Opening with an article by Mrs. Eddy, which was later used in part as a preface to her book, Miscellaneous Writings, this is followed by an interview with her by Lillian Whiting, reprinted from the Ohio Leader. Thereafter come several articles signed variously, student, Christian Scientist, or only with initials. They deal with various aspects of Christian Science, and one of them, entitled Faith Works, Christian Science, and Other Cures, is a vigorous defense of Christian Science against the attacks of the Reverend L.T. Townsend, already referred to. Then there is poetry, quite a lot of it, some original and not so good, some quoted from famous poets and excellent, not only in form, but in appositeness. There are extracts from Science and Health, some well-written book reviews, and three columns of testimonies from those healed. These testimonies are headed by a note to the effect that full particulars will be supplied on application to the editor of the journal. They include, among other things, testimonies as to the healing of dyspepsia, kidney trouble, typhoid pneumonia, chronic dysentery, insanity, cholera, neuralgia, and blindness. But probably the most looked-for features were those written by Mrs. Eddy herself, entitled Bible Lessons and Questions and Answers. There is a department bearing the heading Humorous. It is not very successful, but then it lays no claim to originality save in the matter of selection. You can easily tell a dogwood tree by its bark, from the Chicago Sun, has no special claim to distinction. Many of the jokes were on clergymen and doctors. Finally, there are several columns devoted to the names, addresses, and office hours of practitioners, mostly in or around Boston, but some from New York, and one at least from as far west as Omaha, Nebraska. A few pages of simple advertising round off the issue. Garden swings, pianos, stationery, periodicals, and so forth. There are also notices from the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, and two pages of advertising for Science and Health. From the biographical point of view, the most interesting feature in this issue is the interview with Mrs. Eddy by Lillian Whiting. Lillian Whiting of the Ohio Leader was a newspaper woman of the transitional school. That is to say, she was sufficiently near to the sentimentality and highfalutin of the Civil War period to be still touched by it, and sufficiently near to the irrepressible story-getting afflatus of today to present some of its features. The fact that she was clearly out for a story, while it would make one discount the value of the highlights, would intensify the importance of those more prosaic elements to which, curiously enough, she gives great prominence. Whether she had been sent by her paper to Boston for the express purpose of interviewing Mrs. Eddy is not at all certain. As she tells the story, the idea came to her quite suddenly and without any preparation. She claims to have been so little interested in the subject that she had made no effort to hear Mrs. Eddy either at Hawthorne Hall or elsewhere, but acting on a sudden impulse, wrote to her and asked for an interview. "My note of inquiry," she says, "was met by a very courteous invitation to come to her at an hour named, and accordingly, at 8 o'clock that evening, I rang the bell of a large and handsome residence on Columbus Avenue near Westchester Park, known as the Metaphysical College. A maid ushered me into a daintily furnished reception room where pictures and bric-a-brac indicated refinement and taste." She then goes on to relate how that after she had waited for a few moments, appraising her surroundings, Mrs. Eddy came in and greeted her cordially and gracefully. She was, from what she had heard, prepared for this friendly greeting. But she was not prepared for something more, an indefinable element of harmony, and a peace that was not mere repose, but more like exaltation. She seems to have been a good interviewer, for after some friendly talk back and forth on topics of the day, she got Mrs. Eddy down to telling the story of her early life and of how she arrived at Christian Science. The picture is complete. The sturdy New England ancestry, the devoted Abigail, the little girl sorely tried with sickness, but going on her way. Just a word or two about all the trials and troubles that intervened, and then a very vivid picture of the Sunday morning in Lynn, when this little girl, grown to be a very tired, worn-out old woman, saw something that enabled her literally to arise from a bed of sickness and walk. One detail is added, not before recorded, how that after Mrs. Eddy had read the passage from Matthew, recounting the healing of the man sick of the palsy, she lay for some time thinking over it, and how that with increasing persistency there came to her thought the words, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me." And then Lillian Whiting continues telling the story. She began to grow strong. She arose from her bed and walked into the adjoining room. From that hour, the power was revealed to her. Lillian Whiting says that Mrs. Eddy impressed her as a woman who is, in the language of our Methodist friends, filled with the Spirit. And she relates her own personal experience as the result of the interview. It is interesting because similar accounts of similar experiences later come to be quite common. My own personal experience in the call was so singular that I will venture to relate it. I went, as I have said, in a journalistic spirit. I had not belief or disbelief, and the idea of getting any personal benefit from the call, save matter for press use, never occurred to me. But I remembered afterward how extremely tired I was as I walked rather wearily and languidly up the steps to Mrs. Eddy's door. I came away, as a little child friend of mine expressively says, skipping. I was at least a mile from the Vendome, and I walked home feeling as if I were treading on air. My sleep that night was the rest of Elysium. If I had been caught up into paradise, it could hardly have been a more wonderful renewal. All the next day, this exalted state continued. I can hardly describe it. It was simply the most marvelous elasticity of mind and body. Many years before, Bancroft had noticed the same stimulation, not only on himself, but on others who met her privately or heard her speak in public. And as years went by, this stimulus seemed to increase rather than diminish. It attached also, in a large measure, to her writings. And even when every allowance is made for the influence of pure imagination, the effect often produced by the public reading of her letters must be accounted extraordinary. In these early days of the journal, this was specially noteworthy. A direct word from Mrs. Eddy was the thing most sought after. And through the journal, this word was going out everywhere. As Georgine Milmine, far from friendly, writing much nearer those days, has left record, although her subscription list was small, Mrs. Eddy knew what to do with her journal. Copies found their way to remote villages in Missouri and Arkansas, to lonely places in Nebraska and Colorado, where people had much time for reflection, little excitement, and great need to believe in miracles. The metaphor of the bread cast upon the waters is no adequate suggestion of the result. Mrs. Eddy and Christian Science began to be talked of far away in the mountains and in the prairie villages. Lonely and discouraged people brooded over these editorials, which promised happiness to sorrow and success to failure. The desperately ill had no quarrel with testimonials in which people declared that they had been snatched from the brink of the grave. The journal had taken as its motto Paul's statement, "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God, to the pulling down of strongholds." Any study of its history especially in these early days, must compel the admission that it made good use of its weapons.